The Daily Connect Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Connect Podcast for Tuesday, the 14th of August. It's Stephen Scott here with you once again. On today's programme, we let the kids take over today, quite literally. Yes, we were joined by a group of young people who've taken part in Arnaby Northern Ireland's project to help raise their confidence, and boy has it, as well as teach them important skills, but perhaps most important of all, meet other young people with a visual impairment. Also, RNIB are launching their new How I See video today. It's all about shared spaces, and one of the people who took part in the video told us why he got involved. Plus, there's more tech talk today as I find out about the accessibility features was inside the Amazon Fire tablet. And we're going to be joined by a number of blind mums who can't wait to tell us about Blind Mums Connect, a charity set up to bring together parents with sight loss. That is our Society of the Week. And if that's not enough for you, our producer Chris joins us in the studio as well, giving us your feedback over the past week. But first, we turn to our big topic of the week, which is pavement parking. It's one of those issues that comes up from time to time, and it's really irritating. You walk down the street with your guide dog or your cane, and you come up against a vehicle that is parked so far up on the pavement, you just cannot get past. And it means you've got to actually go out onto the road to get past the vehicle. Not a smart thing to do if you can't see where you're going. Well, one of our listeners got in touch today to tell us all about her experiences. Marissa joined me on the line from Market Harborough.
Hiya.
Hi. So you wanted to come on and talk a bit about your experiences of pavement parking, Marissa. So what's your experience?
Quite a lot, really. Well, when I used to live in another village, again, there was a lot of it, really. And when I was trying to get around with my guard dog and with my cane before that, it was really difficult sometimes because there were lots of things on one of the pavements and on one of the crossings that we had to cross over. So it meant we had to go out into the wider bit of the road and sometimes not get back on very straight and things. And the same when I was in college in Loughborough as well, on the way from the college to the residential part or the other way around, it was a similar situation. And even now, when being between guide dogs at the moment, and I've been learning a route round here because I only moved here in January. And then there's one bit where quite often we have to go onto the road for a bit because there's one or two quite big cars or vehicles that are seem to be parked in the same place all the time. And that makes it really difficult, especially when I haven't got a dog at the moment anyway, and because it's a new route.
So what are you using? Because you had a guide dog. You're in between at the moment. So what are you using a white cane at the moment?
Yeah.
Right, so that must be a bit... Is it more scary with a white cane than a dog?
Quite a lot, especially in a new place and that as well, yeah.
So, talk me through this, because what I'm trying to do here this week is let people know, especially drivers who might be listening to this thinking, well, you know, I've maybe parked my car up on a pavement and never really thought about the impact that it has. Talk about that. So you're coming down the road and if you've got a guide dog, the dog, what does the dog do, actually? Does he try and sort of pull you out into the main road or stop? What happens?
Most of the time just stops first and then you just try and find out why and then if something's there.
But you actually have to walk out sometimes into the middle of the road. You have to walk onto the road to get past the vehicle.
Yeah.
With your dog. Mm. That must be quite a frightening experience.
It can be when some of it, again, when you don't really know the area, when some of it's quite busy, yeah.
And then on top of that, you now are using the cane, which is a whole new ball game. And as a cane user myself, it's not the most pleasant of experiences because, as you know, the guide dog avoids an obstacle, whereas a cane just takes you right into it. Mm. But it's interesting to get your thoughts on this, because then there's the next step, isn't it? When you actually got round the vehicle, getting back onto the pavement and knowing that you're safe once again.
Yeah, it's just sometimes if you have to be on the road for quite a long time because it might be a big vehicle or there's two or three there in a row, and then you have to find out where they finish and where the curb is, and if it's a big one or a small one or a drop curb or whatever. And like you say, try to get back onto it, and sometimes it might not be as wide as it was at the point where you got off, and there might be other things in the way. So
and the road could be on a curve. It could be anything, really. If you can see where you're going, you can see what's happened to the road that you've just walked off. But, you know, we can't do that. What would you like to say to drivers who might be listening to this who are thinking, well, you know, I've parked my car up on a pavement and I haven't really given it much thought. What would you say to them?
Well, I know sometimes people have to because they haven't got a driveway or anything. But at the same time, yeah, it just makes it really difficult. So wherever people can go on the road or on a driveway or somewhere a bit more out of the way, it would be really helpful. Also, when they do, not to have one end or the other sticking out a bit, because that can be quite difficult as well, even when there's one end sticking out onto the pavement and whatever. So, yeah, where people can, it always makes things easier for a lot of people if you can be out the way of the pavement, really. Especially where I am now, because in other places like it, because some of it's on a new estate and the roads are a bit not very tidy and the pavements aren't quite finished and that. So there's one point where I do cross over where it's a drop curb both ways and it's been finished. But then sometimes when that bit's blocked up, so then we have to go a bit further onto the road, it's a bit bumpy and then the curb's not quite right as well. So that can make it difficult. So, yeah, especially wherever really, but try and keep away from being on the pavement if you can, because it is a lot easier and safer, and it doesn't mean people have to go out into the road and be in what could be potentially a dangerous situation.
Sinead McFarlane was on the show yesterday. She said to us that she would like it if drivers, if they have to park on the pavement, because some, as you say, do, and I think we have to concede that sometimes it's not possible for the cars to park on the road fully, but you know, even just to leave enough space for someone to get by and be considerate of someone with a guide dog, and not just, I mean, this isn't just affecting us, people with prams, you know, other people with mobility issues, wheelchairs, scooters, all that. So would you agree with that? Would you agree with Sinead's view?
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say as well, yeah, sometimes if you do need to, just make sure there's enough space for people to be able to stay on the pavement as well and get past, yeah.
Marissa, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you telling your side of the story, and you know, hopefully we can get some change here with this campaign.
Good.
Thanks a lot for coming on, Marissa.
Yeah, thanks.
And you can share your thoughts on pavement parking as well. You can email me, radio@rnib.org.uk. We're also on social media. You'll find us at RNIB Radio on Twitter, and you'll get me on Facebook. Now, as you guys know, Tech Talk is on air each Tuesday at 1, giving you lots of ideas and advice about the latest tech that's out there and that could benefit us as blind or partially sighted people. Well, one of the most recent gadgets that I bought and have slightly fallen in love with is the Amazon Fire tablet, and I thought I'd review it for you. Oh, it's all right, guys. It's fine. It's just I opened my wallet there to spend more money, this time on an Amazon Fire HD tablet. And I thought I'd put it through its paces for you here on Tech Talk.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire. I'll take you to burn.
Okay, so I'm holding the device now in front of me. I have it in a vertical position, so it's like I'm holding a book. And if I go to the very top, I should feel some buttons there. And that means it's the right way up. And it's kind of the only way you would know that it is the right way up. So if the buttons on the device are at the top, then you're holding it the right way. Now, on the top, from left to right, you've got a headphone port, which just takes your standard 3.5mm jack. No lightning ports here. Good old-fashioned 3.5mm headphone jack, perfect for all your standard headphones. And, of course, the little microphones as well. If you want to use it for Skype calls or anything like that, it would work with that. Going along a bit, you've got another button, which is quite a long button. I think there's a groove in the middle, but I can't really tell with my fat fingers. But basically, you've got an up and down button there for volume. Moving along, you then have, nearer the right-hand side, you've got a micro USB port. That is where you charge the device. And there's a power button to switch on and off. Down the left-hand side, you've got two speakers, one at the top from where the device is at the moment, and then one at the bottom. That signifies that the speakers are there, so you would know which way you're holding the device when you're watching it, say, in landscape mode. On the right-hand side, probably my favourite feature of this and any other Android device that you find, micro SD card slots, which means that you can take the very basic storage and increase it by up to 128 gig. And you can do that so cheaply. You know, so if you think about the Apple equivalent, that would probably cost you a good few hundred pounds more. Whereas you can pick up micro SD cards for next to nothing on Amazon or anywhere else. Fire. Now, the first thing you're going to want to do when you get your Amazon Fire tablet is get accessibility turned on. It's got a range of options. It's got voice view, and it's got its own magnifier, which is a way of increasing the size of the screen so that you can get right in close to the apps if you prefer to do that. Magnifiers on these devices tend to be a bit fiddly, and if you've got some partial sight, you might want to have a look at it and try it out. Obviously, that's not something we can do very well on the radio, so instead we're going to play with voice view. First thing you need to do is find the settings app, which means finding the icons on the screen or the apps on the screen.
Video, row 1, column 3.
And using two fingers, swipe up. That'll take you to page 2 of the apps. Now let's find settings.
iPhoto in my videos calculator. Settings.
Double tap.
Settings. Wireless.
Okay, so that's me into the settings. I can now swipe through to look for accessibility. I bet it's near the bottom.
Storage, power, apps and device, personal, my account, profile, parental, security, sound, keyboard and system, sync, help, accessibility.
What did I tell you? It's always at the bottom. Right, double tap.
Accessibility, voice view screen reader.
Now while we're here, let's have a look at some of the other accessibility options it offers. I mentioned magnifier.
Screen magnifier is off. Enables the use of gestures to magnify the screen.
You've also got
font size, normal.
I've left it at normal because I'm not going to use the screen.
High contrast text is off.
Makes the screen just that little bit clearer, the font's a little bit sharper, the darker's darker, etc.
Color inversion is off. May affect performance.
Unless you invert the colours of the screen if you prefer it the other way around, if that makes it easier for you, but it does say it will affect performance, like watching videos.
Colour correction, off, 7 of 15.
Ideal for someone like me who's got colour blindness.
Hearing settings, 8 of 15. Subtitles is off.
That's self-explanatory.
Convert stereo to mono is off.
Good if you'll never use one earbud as well. That's a great setting if you're partially sighted, and I do that a lot. I often just wear one earbud.
Accessibility help. Accessibility user's guide.
So that's an overview of the accessibility features that are in the device. If you want to turn on Voice View, then it's simple enough. Mine's is turned on already, obviously. All you would do is go to Voice View and double tap, and it's on. And there is a user's guide in there as well, so you can learn how to use it if you want to get into more depth and detail. Fire. Okay, so I've already set my device up. So first thing we want to do is find the unlock button. So take your finger to the bottom of the device. Remember, it has to be in vertical mode. And root around for the unlock button.
View more after she's unlock button.
There is. Double tap.
Device unlocked. Home. 2 of 10.
And that puts us right into the home screen. So all your apps are here. You've also got a navigation bar which gives you access to the following.
Books. Video. Games, shop.
And to get to that, all you do is get your finger onto where it says home and then swipe left and right to go through that navigation menu. Also on the screen are your apps.
7 rows, 5 columns, Silk Browser, App Store, Video.
Those are your Amazon apps, and you'll get other ones on there like Kindle and also Music. So let's say we want to read a book. Let's find the Kindle app.
Books.
Double tap.
Books. Killer Justice. Legal Thriller. Brad Williams Book 2, Grayson, Joshua. Book downloaded. Reading is 36% completed. Book.
So that book is one I'm reading at the moment. If I want to continue reading that book, all I do is double tap on it.
I Hate the Career Criminals.
That drops me onto the page I was at before. And to continue reading, all I do is swipe two fingers from the top of the screen down.
I Hate the Career Criminals. I hate the people that have been doing crime for as long as they have lived and will continue to commit crime until their dying days. Generally, their dying days are...
And that's all you do to read a book. It's as simple as that. And Kindle books on the Amazon Fire tablet are really accessible, really works well. You've also got large print options as well if you can see the screen. But if you want to listen through VoiceView, well, that's how you do it. Okay, so what about other ways to enjoy entertainment? What about Netflix, for example? Could we enjoy a TV show with audio description on this? Fire. So to get to the menu, all you do is go to the bottom of the screen and you'll find three buttons.
Back button, home button, app switcher button.
We want the home button.
Home button.
Double tap.
7 rows. 5 columns, books.
Now, my Netflix app I know is on the second page of apps, so what I have to do in that case is to swipe up with two fingers to get to the next page. You'll hear a click to confirm that. There it is, quite a small click. Now I'm going to find Netflix.
Maps, calculate, photo, fire for kids, Netflix.
Again, double tap.
Navigate up button.
So I'm in Netflix, let me scroll around and see what's there.
Grace and my list. Designated Survivor button.
Oh, I like that one. Right, double tap in.
Designated Survivor.
Now, once I'm in here, all I have to do is go back and forward, left and right with my finger, or scroll up and down.
Search. Designated Survivor, 2017, 12-1 season. Play video Designated Survivor button.
Double tap.
Play. Land. Dot dot. Navigate up button.
Turn on white background, then turn red. Netflix. Words appear. A Netflix original series.
Previously on Designated Survivor.
I don't understand. Where was I?
Well, that's my question, Congressman.
So is there a reason that you're asking all these questions? Have I done something wrong?
You were supposed to get a statement.
Play slash pause. But
who is this?
Okay, we'll stop that for a second. Just a quick note, when you watch something on, say, Netflix, it will turn your device into landscape mode. So to get to the menu items, you need to turn the device around. Now, I've got audio description on by default, but if you want to get to it, you've got to be quite quick. So you've got to double tap on the screen and get your finger to the top right of the screen very quickly to find the change language button.
Change subtitle and slash or audio.
Double tap.
Audio, subtitles.
Scroll down to find audio description.
English, audio description, 6 of 6.
Once you've got it, double tap on it. And that's it. Your programs from now on will have audio description.
Fire!
And that's the Amazon Fire tablet. Cheap, easy to use, and accessible. What more could you want in such a small package? The Kindle Fire 8-inch HD. It's well worth a look, or even a listen.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now time for the kids to take over, quite literally, as we let blind and partially sighted children who took part in RNIB Northern Ireland's Realise project take the mic. Over to you guys.
Okay, so we've just been told to tell you a little bit about us, so I'll start off. I'm Nathan Hood, I'm 16 years old, and I have congenital nystagmus, dyslexia, and just general short-sightedness. And this has affected my life severely, so it has. However, thanks to the different activities and things the RNIB runs, I've been able to develop a lot more confidence and a lot more independence.
So I'm Nave, and I'm 12, and I've got albinism, which affects my sight, and I find it hard to see things like in a distance, but like things up close would be okay. It's affected my life quite a bit, but like with the help of the RNIB and all, it's made it easier for me.
Connor?
Well, my name is Connor. I am 13 years old and I've got albinism as well. The RNIB has helped me. I'm able to come and meet others similar to me, so it's been good fun.
And last and least, Josh.
I'm Josh. I'm 13 and I have congenital nystagmus, photophobia and short-sightedness. So this has affected my life in a lot of ways, but thanks to RNIB and the Realise project, it has made my life a lot easier and made me meet new people and do new things.
We've got Donna, project officer for the Realise project here. Donna, captain my captain, can you tell the folks at home what were the hopes for the Realise project?
So hi, I'm Donna. I coordinate the Realise project over the last 5 years. We do confidence building activities, visual awareness, careers and technology support. It's been a privilege working on the project and meeting all the young people, especially those here today who've given up their Saturday to help us.
Oh, has it all gone the way you'd hoped? The project, that is.
We are delighted for where we're at now at the minute. We've exceeded expectations, I think. I suppose seeing our young people progress and move on with confidence, it's more than what we could have asked for. We've reached young people across Northern Ireland, various ages, skills and ability, and we were able to adapt our activities to suit that as well. But Nathan, I'll leave it up to you to talk more about the project and how you found it.
Thank you, Donna. Yeah, so for me at least, the Realise project has definitely helped me with, as I previously mentioned, my confidence and just my general social skills, because before I went on these activities with the Realise project, I would have not been able to really talk to many people and stuff like that, because I just didn't know how to, because I was just so different to them. But now I have developed, because I've been going to these events and things like that, I've developed a lot more social skills and been able to actually talk to people.
I find that the Real Ice Project has been very beneficial for me. It's given me a chance to meet with others and meet with current friends. It has given me a chance to learn different activities and to just have fun in general. I liked the residentials, as it also gave me a bit of independence to go away and to be organised. And I also did one-to-one teaching for touch typing, which was quite enjoyable. Thank you, Nathan. Over to you.
I enjoyed going out on residentials like that too. I particularly like throwing Niall into the lake, although I think that was reversed. I think I was actually one who was thrown into the lake, but that's besides the point.
Well, I think it's given me a lot of confidence. It's given me, like, the experience, because, like, of a lot of things, like, I wouldn't necessarily have done without it. I also particularly liked the other events, such as off-road driving we did, and it was very fun.
Yes, I remember that very, very clearly. You looked as though you were going to run us all over whenever you did the off-road riding. You were going that quick. But I won't hold it against you. Except I will. Josh, how do you feel the Real Ice Project has helped you, and what was your most favourite part?
The Real Ice Project has made me more confident in my abilities and showed me what I can and can't do. It is also, like, there's been many fun times where we've done activities that I've liked and enjoyed a lot.
So, do you have any particular favourite parts, or...?
I liked all of it.
That's a very good cop-out, Josh, I approve.
Lots more to come from the children and young people who took part in the RNIB Northern Ireland Real Ice Project. They're in the studio with us again shortly.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now time to turn to our Society of the Week, and this week we get some blind mums to come on to talk about Blind Mums Connect.
Hi, I'm Kim. I've been blind since birth, and I'm involved with an organisation called Blind Mums Connect, so I'm often the first point of contact for everybody.
I'm Sally Clay. I am visually impaired. I'm a mummy of a 5-year-old. When I was about 12 weeks pregnant, a friend of mine said you should get in contact with them. I think at the time it wasn't Blind Mums Connect, it was just literally an emailing list at that point. And so it really wasn't the big thing that it is now.
We now have a website, blindmumsconnect.org.uk. We're approaching 200 members. A lot of that's just done by word of mouth through our Facebook group, email list, and we run various Skype groups.
What I got out of it straight away was on the phone chats. So the first thing that I was interested in was, how the heck am I going to carry this baby around? Because I use a white cane. I've got no useful vision at all. Through Blind Mums Connect, I met up with some girls and they showed me the sling that they had, and it was absolutely brilliant. And I used that until my daughter was 4. So that was one of the things that they helped me with, find a good solution for carrying my daughter.
It's just about knowing other people and talking to other people that are going through what you're going through. Sometimes it's those extra little things, like how do you make up formula when you've got no sight at all? I feel, for me, Blind Mums Connect has been an absolute massive help, which is why I'm now so heavily involved, because when I was pregnant and when I had a newborn child, my mum would help or my friends would help, but none of them quite knew what I was going through, not being able to see, and how things are just sometimes that little bit different.
The other thing was, most importantly actually, how to make up a bottle, because I didn't know how to do it and I was really worried because I'd planned to breastfeed and it hadn't worked out, and I thought, oh God, I don't know what I'm going to do because I have no idea how I'm going to make these bottles up without giving my daughter gastroenteritis or something horrible. What I did was to email the list, and they sent me a whole load of sheets that they'd made up on how to make formula when you can't see, and also how to feed the baby when you can't see with a bottle. You can just weigh it out on the talking scales, and generally they're pretty accurate. I mean, they're not 100%, but I don't think always sighted people get it 100% accurate. and I made loads of bottles that way. I felt really confident. And also with the way that I fed my daughter, I fed her in a bit of an unconventional way. So she was sitting on my knee with her back facing my tummy, and I could feel her face then, so I knew exactly where the bottle was going. I wasn't going to poke it in her eye.
We generally used to make connections. Our Facebook group is incredibly busy. People want to make friends. They want to be able to share tips. They want to ask questions in a space that's safe with people that understand. And then to move that on and to form friendships. And I think that's what we're really here for, is to bring people together.
They have these amazing Skype groups as well. There's mums of all age kids. There's mums with teenagers. I think there are a couple of grandmas as well. Everybody from tiny babies or bumps even.
I get very affected by people who are on their own, or people who have suddenly lost their sight and then suddenly feel that they're not going to be able to cope with a child. That upsets me a lot on a personal level, because nobody should ever really feel like that. I've been very, very affected by people who are just totally isolated, people who have gone through abuse, people who have had to fight to prove that they can look after their children just because they're blind, and that shouldn't be happening, and it's incredibly sad. I often feel how lucky I am that I didn't go through that, when people can wake up with no sight and a small child, or lose their sight in pregnancy. And that must be absolutely terrifying. And those people and their strength and how they find us, they show determination. We've had people who can't use technology but have made an effort to learn so they can be on our Facebook group because they want the support. And I think that's pretty incredible.
Blind Mums Connect suggested that I get a single room in the hospital, and that I get taken around the hospital and shown where to go, and, you know, familiarised with the environment. And actually that proved to be really useful, because I was in there for 10 days after Alice was born. So I was in there for ages, and if I hadn't known where I was going, I would have been completely out of it and I wouldn't have been able to do anything. And also the single room really helped, because it meant that I was familiar with it and I wasn't having to worry about knocking into other people's beds, or, you know, treading on people's babies or whatever. You know, that it was really, really helpful. I've always been very lucky that I've been able to get out and about. When I first had my daughter, I lost all my confidence with getting around. I thought, oh my God, I've got her in this sling, and if I whack her into something, I'm, you know, and I didn't want to go out and I didn't want to do anything. And you get this real fear, panic response. And this is from somebody who's really confident. Since then, I have been involved with some of the Skype groups and helping out new mums by giving them the benefit of my experience and how I went through the process of becoming much more confident with my daughter and learning. It was almost like learning how to walk again. The way they teach breastfeeding in the hospital is like not VI friendly at all. They give you all this advice that basically involves sight, and you can't do it that way. The breastfeeding peer support is really important, because we can breastfeed, and loads of blind people do, but they do it in a little bit of a different way, and that is very well known by the team at Blind Mums Connect and not well known to health professionals at all.
I don't want people to go through what I went through with feeling alone. I want people to know that there's something out there, and there's always somebody around that can give advice or have a chat.
Blind Mums does have a really important role to play, because no one's going to get what it's like for a blind person to go into an echoey church hall with toddlers all running around, and how to find their way around it and meet other mums. And no one's going to quite get that like another blind mum. And they've also got partially sighted mums on there as well. And their issues, again, are different, because they need to be able to see their children. And so they need to get the kids in high-vis clothes or whatever. You know, there's so many different things and so many different levels of sight that are all covered by that one group.
Right now, I think the future for us is we just want to get bigger and better. We want to get more people involved. But I think more than anything right now, we just want people to spread the word, and we just want to bring people together.
Mums talking there about Blind Mums Connect, a charity set up to help blind mums connect. I mean, how simple is that? But such a great idea. On the Daily Connect podcast. That's our Society of the Week.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Time to let the kids back in as they take over on the Connect conversation this week.
Can you introduce yourself and tell me a wee bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm Huba. I'm 19 years old. Currently, I'm in college.
So, what course are you doing?
I'm doing childcare level 2.
Ooh, that's good. growing up at home, and it's good. Did your sight loss affect you in any particular and give you any particular challenges?
Primary school and secondary school was really, really bad. I hated secondary school and I dreaded going to primary school every single day because it just didn't cater for my needs, and I used to cry every time I went home and my mum used to go and complain, but nothing got done about it.
So yeah, how has college helped you? Or
I just basically tell what I need and then I'll keep nagging them until they do it.
Has being involved in the Real Life Project helped your confidence?
Yeah, because I've met people that have the same disability as me and they share their experiences. I used to care a lot about people's perception, though I just don't really care because it's what I should think about myself and what others should.
Looking forward, what are your plans for in terms of education, training and work?
At the moment, I'm wanting to do level 3 and then going on to level 4, maybe university, to do teaching.
Oh, that's very good. Do you feel employers should be more aware of the steps that can be taken to help people with sight loss?
Yes. I don't know what else to add to that.
So what's your name and your age?
I'm Alia and I'm 12 years old.
So Alia, can you describe a bit about what you can see?
I have albinism and it affects my sight.
So what sort of things do you maybe find hard to do?
Like reading if it's really small print, or seeing small buttons on the keyboard or on the computer.
So you've done touch typing. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, it's improved my typing. I've got faster and, yeah, I would use it in school as well. People are quite impressed that I can touch type without looking.
So what sort of things have you done with the Realise project?
Well, I went to Enniskillen and I went to Newcastle and we did bouldering, we did nightline, was it? The canoeing, stuff like that, the bouldering. I like the bouldering as well. It's like you climb up rocks, but then you're in the water as well.
So why did you go on the residentials?
I wanted to meet new people and make friends. It felt good because everyone was on the same boat.
So what's it been like moving to big school?
It's not that hard. It's not that easy, but it's not that hard. The hardest part was making new friends because no one really knew about cycles. Because I sometimes ask for a question, where do you get bigger papers and all that? I don't mind explaining to people.
So what sort of things are you interested in doing, outside of school?
I love drama, learning languages, and I used to like swimming, but I don't like that anymore.
So can you say something for us in Spanish?
Hola.
So what do you want to do when you grow up?
I'll be a biology teacher.
So why do you want to do that?
Because I like learning about the body parts and all. I want to travel. I want to go to Spain and Germany and all.
So if someone you know just got diagnosed with sight loss, what would you say to them?
There's RNIB, there's always other ways to get around things. You can get a larger print, you can use iPads to take photographs of things so they can make it bigger.
Just stop laughing at me.
Technical difficulties, I'll take over.
Yep.
Thanks, Hib and Alia. Starting school was a big step up, I'd say. Well, for primary school, you're going into school meeting people who most of them were not like you. They were all different. So it was quite... It took a lot of time to get used to and get into a routine of it. But it was quite enjoyable and you get to learn more things. And I remember starting secondary school, because I was more recently, I can remember it more. It was scary walking into a school because you're up at the top of the table, now you're down at the bottom of the table.
Yes, so thank you, Connor, for your... great opinions on this. However, I think we should let other people talk, and perhaps you shouldn't mutiny against me again. This is my show.
Sorry, Nathan.
I'll just move right here.
I forgive you.
For me, Niamh.
For me, Connor.
And for me, Josh.
And finally, me, Nathan. Thanks for listening, and hopefully we speak to you all again sometime. And remember, it's never too late to...
Realise your potential.
As the police knock down the door, Josh is going to play us off with some sweet country mood.
That is the kids taking over on the Daily Connect today. And if you want to listen to the full conversation that they had, then you can check it out on the Crack On podcast, which is available from RNIB Northern Ireland.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Chris Wallace is in the studio with your views. Do you love people, Chris Wallace?
I certainly love people. I love dancing. I'll dance with anybody.
Will you dance with me?
Oh, anytime, any place, anywhere.
Liar. That is what you call fake news right there. Right, so you're in the studio to give us our views. Well, not our views. Your views.
That wasn't even planned.
I don't even think we'd set that when you... Right, what have people been saying this week then about the show?
Well, lots of people, as usual, getting in touch. And we have another poem from Ryan McGrenigan. He loves getting in touch with RNIB Connect Radio. And his poem this week is... I managed a paper round. I worked in McDonald's. Business before university, before leaving around 21. 15 years on, RNIB Connect Radio is on. And the window looks down to the lawn. Plans to play snooker, plans for a run, plans to get the tidying done, plans for real country, plans to sing along. It's a quick 60 minutes, then it's gone. Plenty of plans, that can't be wrong. How about that?
There you go. You know, all you had to do is get TikTok into that. And, that'd be a winner. So
That's a challenge for you there. But it's not just Ryan. Jenny's also been in touch. She loves listening to RNIB Connect Radio. She says it's really relaxing listen, and she thinks we're playing some really good music. So that's great.
I agree, yeah.
Now, the big conversation of last week, the Connect conversation, was on shared spaces. So many of you have been in touch, and that's been fantastic. The conversation did not stop when we got off the air. It kept going, and a few people have continued the discussion. Gordon Love has sent an email saying, "Hi, Stephen and crew. It was interesting to listen to the coverage of shared spaces this week, and I thought I should add some feedback based on my recent experience of house hunting here in central Scotland. I knew already about shared spaces, but until I began looking for a new house, I had not encountered the related shared by design street layouts in new housing developments. I visited house sites in Muirhead and found that the entire site was laid out with only partial pavements, most of what there was leading into car bays or green verges. Both I and my guide dog found that we simply had no way of identifying where we were or how to get around, let alone learning safe, clear routes from the houses in estate to the main road. I reported this to the site office and made it clear that I wouldn't be able to consider buying one of the houses, even though I had found one which was otherwise suitable. It was a scheme which was hopeless for mobility for blind homeowners, and the layout would equally affect wheelchair users and people with prams and pushchairs, all of whom would have to go onto the road to get around and take their chances with the traffic. At another scheme, this time in Stirling, there was more pavement, but again, some pavements ended in car bays and verges. Where there was a pavement with a clear curb, the benefits was offset by the placement of traffic camming at road junctions and the road surface raised up to the level of the pavement at curb height. As there was no tactile paving at these points, it was not possible for me to know when I was stepping out onto the road, and my guide dog, of course, was not stopping as there was no identifiable curb. Again, no sale. I thought that these designs were down to site developers, but when I talked to the site agent, she told me that the layouts were down to the Scottish Government's shared by design policy, which is, in essence, shared spaces for housing. Again, the idea is that traffic will slow down and roads will be safer. I can't say that I felt safer trying to get around these schemes, and I cannot believe that the Scottish Government understands just how discriminatory these new housing developments are. I feel quite strongly that blind people are being excluded from these schemes, as they are, in effect, no-go areas for anyone with a visual impairment who does not feel up to the challenge of testing their luck with traffic. And that's from Gordon in Stirling.
Well, I appreciate that, Gordon. A lot in there to unpack, but I think in essence what we're talking about here is that fear of when you move away, you move to a new area. And actually that was Marissa's comment this morning when we were talking about pavement parking, when Marissa called in. She said she moved to a new area and, you know, it's one thing when you come up against a car, you know, you think, well, okay, I know this road, but if you don't know it, that road could bend off to the right or, you know, go around to the left. You've no idea where that road is going and you're trying to negotiate your way back onto it after being in the middle of the road. So imagine that in a shared space environment.
Absolutely. It seems terrifying, actually. And we've had a few more comments about shared spaces. WF Streets for All got in touch via Twitter and they said shared space is dangerous for everyone, although particularly for people with sensory or learning disabilities. How do you teach your children to stop at the curb when there isn't a curb? They also provide an information sheet on their shared space research. That's WF Streets for All on Twitter. And David was in touch via Facebook. He says, having been a lorry and bus driver, shared space areas were a nightmare. I was driving a 42-ton lorry and was meant to share a space with a 10-stone person. As a pedestrian, I get scared silly by these crazy roads and I have good sight and hearing. It must be a minefield for people with hearing or sight problems. Shared space should be ditched.
Well, there you go, and that's from a driver's perspective.
Yeah.
Says it all,
doesn't
it?
Fully sighted as well.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's quickly talk about sports.
So we did our blind sports piece last week on tennis, and Lynn was in touch via Facebook. She says, as a non-sporty, as you can get,
that's
absolutely
me.
Hated sport at school when I was sighted, as I was used as the how not to do it example by the teachers. Avoided participating in sport ever since until earlier this year when I was able to participate in 3 out of 4 blind tennis sessions. I was only popping along to show willingly, as you don't attend events, you're not interested, there's a danger there will be future events.
Thanks so much, Chris. That's your feedback for this week and lots more, I'm sure, to come. Keep your feedback coming in. Give us a call in the studio or email radio@rnib.org.uk. You'll also find us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thanks, Chris.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
And finally on the podcast today, it's time to turn to our How I See video, the new one from RNIB. Just launched today, actually, and it's all about shared spaces. The new film features 3 blind people who talk about the issue and how they try and cope with it. Let's hear from one of them, Pardy Gill.
For many years, my vision was quite reasonable, but in the past year, my vision has deteriorated. I am much more reliant on the use of control crossings and tactile markings to be able to safely and independently navigate. So I'm not against shared spaces, but we all need accessible street design for visually impaired people, and these areas haven't really been accessible once curbs, control crossings and pavements are removed. There's one shared space that was created in 2012 after the Queen visited Leicester called Jubilee Square, where the curbs and pavements and tactile markings have been removed, so motorists, cyclists and pedestrians share the same space in the city centre. And that is the only shared space I'm aware of in Leicester city centre. But also there have been other issues in more recently in Leicester city centre, where several control crossings have also been removed by the city council, which have also impacted on many visually impaired people such as myself. I can't use Jubilee Square myself. Just the problem with shared space is that it creates a lot of ambiguity for many blind and visually impaired people when you're attempting to make eye contact with motorists, which myself and many of the VIPs frankly can't do. So for my own safety, I feel very anxious when I use these shared spaces, such as Jubilee Square. So I for my own safety, I don't use those spaces anymore. I frankly can't. And the other problem is with that remove of several control crossings, which has greatly impacted my independence to be able to navigate freely into the city centre of my own accord. That has severely limited my independence, because once these control crossings are removed, once again you're reliant on visual cues when it's safe to cross.
Check out the full video on RNIB's Facebook page. It's facebook.com/RNIBUK. Hey, give us a like when you're there. You'll also find the video on rnib.org.uk, and you can get involved in the campaign there as well. That's it for the Daily Connect podcast. We're back tomorrow from 10 till 12 a.m. 12 p.m. I should say, not that early, live on RNIB Connect Radio. You can also get the podcast just after 5 here on the feed. We'll catch you tomorrow. The Daily Connect Podcast.